Welcome to the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Stuart Mandel, joined as always by Bruce Feldman, who hours before we came on landed back in LA from Big Ten Media Day. We will be meeting up at Pac-12 Media Day on Friday. But curious, Bruce, from afar, following this from afar, Big Ten Media Day, especially the first day on Tuesday, really felt like the Kevin Warren victory tour. A guy who, for the first 2 years of his time as commissioner, was mostly known for kind of botching the messaging around whether they were going to play or not in 2020. The alliance, you know, nothing particularly flattering, goes out and gets USC and UCLA, and woo boy, there was some flexing going on there in Indianapolis.
Yeah, I think there was. And I think a lot of the people around the league were feeling like it was a little bit of a victory lap. This was the first time since that news had really come out that everybody was together. And so I think, you know, obviously the impending TV deal with the Big Ten is happening pretty soon. And so we expect that to be a big money thing. Now, you know, whether schools will be getting $60 or $70 million for the TV deal. And I think it's like, I mean, this isn't where I wanted to go right here, but I do think you and I have had these conversations a little bit offline and maybe on the podcast the last time, but just about, I think there is a lot of confusion when it comes to when people talk about projections for what the TV deals may be or the rights deals, but also I think people get confused where they'll see a number that's the total revenue as opposed to just what they're getting for their broadcast partner.
Yeah, realignment, it just in general, is very confusing. I've spent the week immersed in conversations on Twitter and in radio interviews about exactly what you're talking about: TV value, subscriber fees, affiliate fees. And it's like the season's about to start. But to your point, especially when it comes to, you know, the survival of the Pac-12, there's a lot of numbers being thrown around. And just quick cliff notes here. When you see that, for instance, the Big 12 this past year distributed $42.6 million each to its members, which is very impressive. And that doesn't even include, by the way, Longhorn Network or Oklahoma's deal. But that's not all TV money. There's NCAA tournament money in there. There's the CFP, your bowl contracts, sponsorships. So when you hear somebody say, oh, the Big Ten teams are going to make $100 million from this new TV deal. Well, no. They might make $100 million, which would be a lot from their conference, but the TV deal is a part of it. And without knowing the details, I can't say whether it's 50% of it, 40, 60, somewhere in that range. But, you know, and especially when you get conference networks involved in it too, which are a different bucket, it's complicated. But back to Kevin Warren. So first of all, he did nothing to, if you were looking for him to get up there and say, we got USC and UCLA, we got to 16, we're done. That is not the message he conveyed. It was that, sure, we might expand again at some point, but it'll have to be the right team, but we'll expand it. We might expand again. A couple that jumped out at me from a story Pat Forty did with him. I think it's changed the narrative on the Big Ten Conference. We shrunk the United States in one announcement. Another one further down in that story. I don't think you can, close the door on future expansion. From a strategy standpoint, this is not the old college athletics. For the individuals and the conferences and schools that are not thinking that way, they're going to be Sears. Sears, the company that went bankrupt. That's straight blunt. That's where the deal is going. We have about 3 or 4 more years of perpetual disruption. During that period, either you're going to embrace change and build a business and get stronger or not. When they talk about hiring somebody from outside of college athletics, this is what that person sounds like.
Yeah, I think you have a lot of other factors floating around it. Like, at one point you had most, the players who were speaking at Media Day and some of the head coaches, and one of the podiums was set up for Barry Alvarez, obviously the former Wisconsin coach and AD. And he's a special advisor or a senior advisor, I think that's his title for football. And is somebody Kevin Warren leans on. And he's very prominent around the Big Ten. And he got asked about Notre Dame, which, by the way, he used to work at Notre Dame as an assistant. And, like he said, that's because that's kind of the white whale left in the realignment or expansion piece of this as it relates to these conferences. And he was like, look, you got asked, that's a better question for Jack Swarbrick. But he was like, his read on it was, look, I don't think they're any big hurry to make a move. But he was like, certainly, this league would welcome, I think he said, like, welcome the interest of Notre Dame. It wasn't just like, but I think that's the one thing that everyone's like, okay, that would be the no-brainer for all sorts of reasons. The appeal they have, the branding they have, the geography where they are, and certainly the academic reputation there. But I think some of the conversations I've had from people inside the Big Ten as well as around the league is that why some of this stuff is so murky and confusing is because you have a lot of people who I think and start, includes the conference presidents who may not think the same way as most fans do. I think they don't think the same way. But from what I've heard from some of the conversations is they may have interest in certain universities that may not be a bottom line fit financially necessarily to add something, but maybe there's a prestige or there's relationships. And I think what you have is a lot of people who are in the process who I think are very comfortable, engaging the dialogue. Doesn't mean that it's going to go anywhere. But I think because of that, and I think you have some people, high up at the Big Ten who are that way, I think it almost creates a scenario where almost anything is on the table technically. So you may see a report from this person or that person. And I think there could be some merit to it. It's just, at this point, who ends up being the dance partners who actually, go somewhere with it. I think that's a different story. But I feel like I have a better sense of it after just being around this a little bit more this week. And I think that's where a lot of that stuff comes from, because I think a lot of people in the process are talking and considering things and listening to a lot of stuff.
Well, as always with realignment, it's hard to say for sure what's accurate and what's not. But at the same time, he was kind of leaving things open-ended. There were at least two different reports mentioning schools that the Big Ten was looking at. Not surprising, Washington, Oregon, two of them. Stanford and Cal also mentioned. And I believe Florida State and Miami at one point. Florida State and Miami are locked away for like 20 years, so I wouldn't put much. Wouldn't be holding your breath for that one. And this whole thing couldn't come at a worse time for the Pac-12, which is right smack dab in the middle of trying to negotiate a new contract with ESPN. That will probably determine whether or not the league can survive or not. And I don't know how, if you're George Kliavkos, I don't know how you get those schools, in particular Oregon, Washington, to sign any sort of grant of rights, any sort of, hey, we're committed to the conference for the foreseeable future, when many people, including the commissioner of the Big Ten himself, are at least giving out the perception that that invite might be coming soon. I don't know if soon means in a couple weeks, in a couple months, in a couple years, but nobody, when the SEC got Texas and Oklahoma last year, I think the general perception was, okay, that's 16, that's a nice round, you're done. Like, what else do you need? Whereas Kevin Warren is leaving it open to interpretation of what exactly, where is this headed? 18, 20, 24. Are you going to take over? Are you going to expand into other countries? It's got the word I would just use is it's causing a lot of instability across the industry.
I think some of it again is you have some presidents who look, use the example of Stanford and Cal. I think there are some presidents who feel some alignment with them, maybe in how they think, from a university standpoint, maybe from a cultural standpoint. The part that I think the Big Ten leadership has got to really get its head around is if the TV, if the broadcast partners aren't going to pay anymore for those schools, it's like, here's what your math is. If you have 16, your chunk is going to be smaller if you have 18 or if you have 20. If they do not, carry their weight, and I doesn't sound like those other schools would when it comes to the bottom line of it. So again, I think there's been discussions and interests, and these things have been kicked around because that's what I've heard that too. I just don't know to what degree of it, Stu. And then you start hearing stuff about, what would the strategy be if it's like if you're the Big 12 to say, hey, maybe we think we take, are the Arizona schools the most vulnerable to add? Geographically, they're probably the easiest to fit. They don't bring a ton of TV juice with them, certainly relative to Washington and Oregon. But if you pull two schools away from the Pac-12, does it weaken it that much that all of a sudden, then it kind of for it may force the hand of other schools? And I don't know if that's a strategic play as much as if that's just speculation, because it's definitely something I heard, Monday night when I got to Indianapolis. And I don't, again, I don't know how much of this again is people having just discussions, or is there really a plan further behind it and has a lot of momentum?
I hope people are following this because I'm more confused now than I was when we started the podcast. My sense is, and I again, you're just reading tea leaves here. I'm sure they vetted Oregon, Washington, Cal, Stanford when they made that decision to bring in USC and UCLA, and for whatever reason decided not to. Doesn't mean that door shut forever, but there was another comment Kevin Warren. There were several comments Kevin Warren made that made news. He told our Nicole Auerbach that he's changed his mind about needing automatic bids for Power Five team champions in the playoff. Crazy how that stance changed once they got two more schools. But he also said that the TV deal. Actually, I'm going to back up. This was not Kevin Warren. This was Mark Silverman, the president of Fox Sports, talking to Scott Docterman, another one of our writers. That this TV deal that we've all been waiting for, that reportedly is going to be for $1 billion a year. May or may not include ESPN as a partner, may include CBS, is going to be wrapped up in the next few weeks. So, if you were going to add even more schools, wouldn't you then want to do it in the next few weeks? I feel like once that thing gets signed, then to your point, like there's not the TV, as I was explained to me by somebody in the TV world, these networks, they have a lot of money, but they don't when they go and they pay $1 billion or 1.2 billion, whatever it is, they don't
They
wait
know what
to
they're
make.
paying for. They know
They
what
know
they're
what they're
paying
paying
for.
for, and they're not going to just rip that thing back up and be like, oh, you decided to add Oregon and Washington, great, let's write a new contract. If it's a Notre Dame, they probably would do that, but not just anybody. In fact, the SEC to this day, I have not heard anything indicating that they got a new contract when they got OU in Texas. Everybody assumes that. But they had just finished that deal with ESPN maybe 6 months before that announcement. So to the Big Ten, back to the Big Ten for a second. Yeah, I don't think that, you do that right away because there's not this endless well of money that they just keep tapping back into. At some point, they're tapped out. Now, if you wait 2 or 3 years, once things have died down, once they've started being able to, make back some of the money from the actual broadcasts, then there might be more money to be had from the TV partners if you bring in more schools. But, this is explained to me by this TV consultant. You're better off waiting a few years and kind of spacing these things out if you're trying to maximize the money you get from subscribe cable, cable providers, local TV affiliates, all that sort of thing. So that's what I'm sticking with. Either they turn around in the next 2 to 3 weeks and invite Oregon and Washington, or that's going to quiet down for a couple of years. Now, there's the whole Big 12 aspect of it, but in terms of the Big 10, that's kind of what I think we're looking at. They had actual football coaches and football players at Big 10 Media Day too, and I know you spent a lot of time with them. When I've gone to Big 10 Media Day, it always feels like a large, a disproportionate percentage of the attention is paid to Ohio State and Michigan. Was that the case? And if so, What insights did you glean about those two teams?
Yeah, I think that was the case. Monday, the first day was a Michigan. And so, Michigan was the big brand there, right? Obviously, they just won the Big Ten title last year, went to the playoff. Iowa, you had Kirk Ferentz, and they have really good players there, but it's just not the same. If you were to say who are the biggest schools, and look, we just spent 15 minutes, whatever, talking about TV brands, but it would be, in the conference, you would say you'd probably be these four schools: Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State. And if you want to throw a fifth in there, like Nebraska and Wisconsin obviously have, TV brand power. Almost all of those, other than Michigan, went, actually, that's not true. Nebraska went on the same day as Michigan. But, it was a lot of Jim Harbaugh. I thought Jim Harbaugh was in an especially chatty mood. Sometimes I feel like you don't know which Jim Harbaugh you're going to get. And I remember I talked to him, I don't know, for 10, 15 minutes just about like a lot of guys that he's really excited about. And I talked to a couple of their players as well. And two things kind of emerged. I feel like from talking to Harbaugh, he is really excited about the incoming freshman class that they signed. Receivers, defensive line. There was at one point he referred to two of their linemen as their like gift from the gods, but especially one of them was Kenneth Grant, who's this 349-pound, he's a three-star defensive lineman from the state of Indiana, and he said he's run a 40 in the 4.9s since he's been there. And just they have a lot of depth at receiver now, which, as you remember, last year was a question mark, right? And you still got Donovan Edwards, you still got Blake Corum, who are really dynamic running backs, and a good offensive line. I mean, I came away from talking not just to Harbaugh, to their players, as especially their players had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder about, like, I mean, they didn't use this word, at least the ones I talked to, but like the perception is this was a fluke, almost like that they beat Ohio State and won the conference. So I came away with a little bit of a stronger feel for them from those conversations, right?
I don't think people
And
think it was
also,
a fluke. They had guys like Aidan Hutchinson who were really, really good, but I'm sure they've noticed that the vibe of, okay, congrats, Michigan, great season, Big Ten championship, but this is still Ohio State's conference. We're right back to picking Ohio State. I know I'm on the Ohio State bandwagon. Is that more what you're referring to?
it is, and I think they heard a lot of it. What's going to be the mood like when you guys go into the shoe this time, and that kind of thing. And they're like, we expect to win. It's just, just along the lines of that. I spent a bunch of time around the Maryland players and Locksley, but especially like Rakim Jarrett, and I came away thinking, especially how much I know Locksley is, and even when I did one of their games last year, he is a huge believer in Tua Tagovailoa and how talented he is. And look, he finished the year really strong last year in the bowl game. I came away thinking, okay, maybe this is a team that we should. I'm not saying they're going to win the league or anything like that, but I think their win total was like 5.5. And I was like, okay, maybe I, after talking to some of the guys on that team, I came away with a little bit of a more optimistic feel, especially from some of the things that would, like, they have a really good corner who was banged up last year, Jacorian Bennett, who's, pretty special too. And we know the receivers they have. But just from talking to those guys, I kind of was like, okay, I could see this, especially with Locksley's talking about the most improved, they have all their offensive linemen back, and it's the most improved room on the team. And I was like, they do have a lot of reasons for optimism. And so there was that. And then certainly our colleague Mitch Sherman did, I think, a pretty good summation of Nebraska and Scott Frost at this point. I think a lot of people, even inside the program, thought Scott Frost was going to lose his job last year. Took a pay cut. He's still there. And yeah, it's going to be interesting. The schedule is easier. I don't know if the talent is much better than what they had, obviously. But so I think there's some intrigue about Nebraska. Can they, They had so many close losses. I don't know, it was like 8 or 9 one-score losses last year. Can they get that fixed? And then, as we're taping today, which is Wednesday, wasn't just Ohio State. It was Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State, Wisconsin. There was a lot more star power. Especially Ohio State brings C.J. Stroud, who's, I think will make a big run at the Heisman. Jackson Smith and Jigbo, I think will make a big run at the Biletnikoff. I mean, there was a lot more star power there today, because in large part because of what Ohio State brought.
With Maryland, so there was a mailbag question that I, for my written mailbag, that I almost went with and then decided to scrap. It was, okay, the Big Ten had no coaches fired last year. Other than Scott Frost, is there anybody that's on the hot seat this year? And my first thought was, well, Mike Locksley's going into his fourth year. He hasn't done much yet. Maybe him. Well,
No,
nope,
they just
he
got a
got a
new
huge
deal.
contract. He just got a huge contract. And,
I
they did
think
go 7-6 last year,
this
clobbered
is the
Virginia
best year
Tech in
they've
a bowl
had
game.
in like this is the
Yeah.
best year they've had in like 7 years. So I would take issue with they haven't hasn't done much. Like last year
Well,
I think
I
was a
mean,
pretty
their
big
big year
year.
last year, they went 3-6 in the Big Ten. So I don't want to, hand them the Coach of the Year award just yet. But, I think what Maryland has going for it is all that great skill talent on offense. And, with the offense he runs, they should put up a lot of points. And the thing that's working against Maryland on defense is that a couple of their best players on defense transferred, and they weren't that good on defense to begin with. So, and then they've got, and they're in the other side of the conference. It's so hard for, what's that formula for a Maryland or a Rutgers or frankly an Indiana in a full season, not the 2020, to have that breakout season. They need to beat some, or, they need to, I'm looking at Maryland's schedule. They open at Michigan, and they play Michigan State. Then they play another potential sleeper team, Purdue. Then they're at Indiana and Northwestern. That's kind of your soft spot. And then the next three are at Wisconsin, at Penn State, Ohio State. That's tough.
That is tough. On the defensive side, so Brian Williams got promoted to be the full-time defensive coordinator. He actually, Locksley said, took it over for the Rutgers game. So, and there was a noticeable difference. Rutgers, and then as you said, they handled Virginia Tech. I think in those two games, I think they averaged maybe 13 points a game on defense. It was like a huge difference. Now, obviously, the schedule, they were coming off playing three top 25 teams before that, and they got banged around. And I mean, again, the game we had, they played at Ohio State, which I think even if they were at full strength, they probably lose. But they lost Dante Demas, who's one of the best players in college football, the week before at Iowa, and I think they were down their top three corners. And again, Ohio State's the last team you want to face if you're down three corners. So, maybe the new DC, who has a little bit of momentum for what he did at the end of last year, as you said, they handled Virginia Tech, pretty well in that bowl game. I think it was 54-10. So.
It was such a blowout that I honestly don't remember it. I see it sitting here on my Athlon, and I'm sure I watched some of it at the time, and I have no recollection of it. Speaking of defenses, Ryan Day was asked about, I mean, you and I both have a lot of respect for Jim Knowles, who's coming in there from Oklahoma State. There's high expectations. He's going to turn them around after a, frankly, 2 of their last 3 years, they weren't that great on defense. One, they were fantastic, the one in between. He said he expects a top 10 defense nationally. That's the expectation. Top 10 defense. Is that realistic?
They have good, they have recruited well on the D line now. I feel like that's caught up with them. The issue to me last year was they looked really out of sync, and they have really, they were really good in the secondary for a long time, and then that obviously tailed off, and at linebacker they got exposed a bunch. I don't, if they have a top 25 defense, I think their offense will be so explosive. Top 25 defense should be, I think, could be enough to lead them to a national title. Top 10 defense, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they have. I know they had a great freshman cornerback last year. They had some pieces there, but they weren't close. I think you know, over the last 2 years, and last year, obviously, they had made a change where Matt Barnes took it over from, you know, it was a mess. They really got exposed by Oregon in that game, and I feel like they were just kind of limping to the finish line, right? And so,
In the first
I
half of
don't
the
know.
Rose Bowl, even I think you t the one there was a Covey kick return in there, but they were still. I mean, they gave up 35 points in the first half of the Rose Bowl. Now they've got two defensive ends who were freshmen last year, who are five stars, who are expected to start this year. These are the kind of guys that Ohio State brings in, and you expect them to just reload. I don't know that talent's going to be lacking. I think last year they lacked. I mean, this is a high bar, but they lacked a Chase Young. They lacked a Joey Bosa. We'll see if somebody like that's going to emerge this year. The other thing I would just say about Ohio State is, I mean, I think we all expect the offense to be ridiculous, and I think it will be for the most part. But Bill Landis has written about this at times for us. Their offensive line hasn't been quite as dominant as I think sometimes their quarterbacks and running backs and receivers make them look. And, you know, I think of the Michigan game where CJ Stroud was constantly under pressure and really struggled with that. I think that is another area that you're going to need to see improvement if they're going to win the national title or even play
I
for the
mean,
national title.
I think Justin Fry was a really good hire. I think he did a good job when they were undermanned at UCLA out here. I think he's very sharp, having been around him a bunch, and he's worked with Ryan Day before. I feel like that's a good fit. One of the challenges I feel like Ohio State looked like they had, it almost looked like they had a center and four tackles trying to play guard. Like, it just looked like some mismatched parts at times.
Okay, so we're recording this on Wednesday night. I believe you'll be listening to it on Thursday. Thursday midday or so, I take the very, very quick flight to LA. It's Pac-12 Media Day, the last one of the of any conference, Group of Five or Power Five. They always do it somewhere glitzy in LA. And I just am so fascinated to see what the vibe is going to be. Because again, it is in LA. The two schools that are ditching them are going to be their coach and players will be there. Obviously, they are not the ones that decided to leave the Pac-12. I hope everybody leaves them alone. We are all waiting breath.
Well, when you say everybody, I mean, do you think like Jonathan Smith is going to walk up and punch Lincoln in the eye? Like, what do you
No, I mean,
think
like,
the
you know how these
layout?
things are. Let's not use Caleb Williams as the example because a lot of people are going to want to talk to Caleb Williams regardless about a lot of things, but. You know, going up to UCLA player X and being like, "Hey, what do you think? You think it's going to be awkward going into stadiums?" And there's going to be a lot of that, don't you think?
I mean, you know, it's interesting though. Like, one of the things that I came up a little bit with Big Ten media days was going into this. There was some talk about players potentially getting a cut of revenue from in the Big Ten because it's another thing Kevin Warren has like been open to dialogue with Sean Clifford, and there was. That got a little bit of attention going in. When you talk to players about it, and I did, it's like it's not happening now. So it won't affect them at this point. And so what I'm saying to that is like it's not going to affect the guys who are, you know, it's a couple of years away from now. I mean, they can talk about it, but I think it's a little different. You know, the players, John Gaines, I feel like has been there since like Neuheisel. You know, he's the UCLA offensive lineman who's going to be there. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be going to play in
No, these are not the
Nebraska if
guys that are
that's
going to
where
be
they
playing in those stadiums.
yeah.
I mean, maybe Caleb Williams will if he's actually there for a fourth season.
I'm guessing if you're a USC fan, you'll love Caleb. I think it's probably a bad sign if Caleb's still
Yeah, it'll
there
be like a little bit like
when.
how Spencer Rattler's still. Why is he still?
Yeah.
No, but I think that the George Kliavkov State of the Union address, right? Each of these commissioners has taken their turn and given their little State of the Union address. And two of them, I would say, were kind of a shot to the bow across the Pac-12. Brett Yormark, the new Big 12 commissioner, said, "We're open for business. We're talking to schools left and right. Everybody knows who he's referring to." four to six schools in the Pac-12. And then, I mean, here's another, going back to, not to keep harping on this, but just not used to seeing Kevin Warren be so brash.
Kevin Warren, by the way, if you look back, and I don't know if there's a transcript up somewhere of the question that was asked him. I don't remember who it was, if it was Dennis Dodd or whoever it was, I think said, I should look at what the word is. I was like, sitting next to somebody. I was like, ooh, that's kind of a loaded word. It was almost like after you garroted the Pac-12.
Well, this might have been the answer to that question, because it was a question about, you know, how do you, about the you know, I mean, the big, remember when they were in an alliance? I mean, that's what's so rich about this. They are in an alliance. They've technically been in an alliance since like the 1940s. And now apparently he and Kliavkov haven't talked since all this happened. Their offices are setting up a phone call. If a conference is allegedly on the brink, there are many more issues than members leaving. There are deeper issues. I'm not promoting conferences facing a crisis or going out of business, not at all. But I come out of the NFL for 21 years. In the NFL, either you succeed or you fail, and that's not only on the field. I'm talking about in business, operationally. Either you have your fan base or you don't. So here comes Kliavkov. You know, it just seems like everybody, all his counterparts are kind of like staring at the body. What's he going to say? Like, what is the tone of his message?
I want to give you the, so this is our friend Dennis Dodd. Okay. And there was a word, it was almost like, it was like a little bit of a nails on a chalkboard part or something. What sort of studentship? I don't know if that's
stewardship.
Yeah, it's listed on the website as studentship. What sort of stewardship is there for you in the sense that when we talk about academics, there's an academic part of this, but when you add USC and UCLA ripping apart a conference that's been around for a century, huge academics ties to those schools, athletes will be flying over four time zones to the East Coast, play games and matches. I guess what sort of responsibility and stewardship is there for you and not only others in this expansion pursuit? The ripping apart a conference part was the one that kind of caught my ear.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is what happened, but you don't normally hear that, you know, presented quite that directly on Twitter. Last night I showed the contrast between Kevin Warren's kind of like take no prisoners quotes and Jim Phillips, when he, you know, the ACC commissioner, when he went up there a week ago, which was, now look, he's not in the position of power that Kevin Warren is obviously in all this. Who was saying kind of the exact opposite, right? Like, not we're gonna, you know, either you're a business, you're a good business or you fail or that kind of thing. It was, hey, the college sports is not the NFL.
I feel like Jim Phillips just takes the high road a lot.
Not the high road. It's the high and mighty road. It's the, you know, we've got a it's all the, you know, really noble talk about. You know, he kept using the phrase gated communities. College sports shouldn't be, you know, just two or three gated communities. We should be a big family, a big hunky-dory family, academics, da-da-da-da. And it's very admirable. Like, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but you just couldn't get a bigger contrast. And one of those conferences is getting a $1 billion TV deal. And the other one is trying to figure out how the heck to get out of the one that John Swofford signed 5 years ago. I don't love it. I don't love what's going on in college sports right now. It's really ruthless. It's always been ruthless, but it's just
you don't love it. Why?
I don't like when fans of schools that are, you know, Power Five schools, good program. They're not Alabama, but they're good programs. And they're being told, you have no value. You're going to get left behind. You know, these are the only two conferences that matter now. All the rest of y'all can just take what's left. That's not a good feeling if you're a fan of the, what, you know, 30-something schools that aren't in those two conferences.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that is... I don't know. I mean, I feel like that is just a very big reality, though, in how our society works, right?
It is, and in some ways, I mean, it's just capitalism. It's capitalism at work, and even though this feels like a particularly, harsh summer, an inflection point, if you will, it's been working toward this for 30 years. Let's not act like college football was
Yeah.
its kind of old traditional self until 2021. I mean,
I mean,
the
this is
ACC
like
put the
Nick
Big East
Saban
out of
talking.
business. The
Right.
Southwest Conference went out of business. Like this, if the Pac-12 goes away tomorrow, it'll be really sad, and yet it won't even really be. Nobody will be able to say it was unprecedented. So this is how it's been building for 30 years. Maybe I should commend Kevin Warren. He's not getting up there pretending this is about anything else but just cold hard business.
No, and I do think like it's one of these things where you hear these schools, I use the example of talking to the AD at UCLA, Martin Jarman, and we talk about how they were, this is the night after basically the news gets out that UCLA and USC are leaving. He's talking about being $100 million in debt just from since the time he's got there. Now, a big part of it was in the wake of the pandemic, but still, I mean, I think the part, and we've talked about this, but it's you, if you're in those positions, you can't, can you afford not to be aggressive? And that's the challenge because, they're in these arms races of how much money they're spending. And even the schools that are not, in the haves, and let's just say the haves for this purpose is the Big Ten and the SEC. But there's still people making a fortune around the athletic departments with, certain coaches and different things. And so
Well, why do you think they're? I
it's
mean, one of the reasons they feel like they got to stockpile this money is because of what you referenced to earlier. At some point, revenue sharing or athletes as employees, I mean, that's inevitable now. It's going to happen at some point. I don't know how many years away that is, but it's going to happen. And these conferences that are getting $100 million per school might need that money because you're not going to be able to keep it all for yourself anymore. But that's a whole other conversation. And my Zoom thing here is saying we have less than a minute left and it's really late. So I think we're gonna call it a night for this podcast. I'll see you there in less than 24 hours. We have a lot of good mailbag questions, and don't think I've forgotten them. Send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.